of Balance with your host, Ruth Coplin. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, discussing topics with local relevance and global significance. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show. I hope you've had a good week. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're a new listener, I'd like to let you know this is a two-hour show combining thought-provoking conversations out and about on the street with in-depth arts interviews with special guests. For the arts interview in the second hour, I'm pleased to be interviewing award-winning film director Bobby Roth. Over his long career, Bobby has directed more than 80 episodes of television, 25 TV movies, and 13 feature films. Bobby's independent films have been exhibited in over 100 film festivals worldwide, and five of his films have premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, where he has also been a judge. His work in commercial TV includes directing episodes for such TV favourites as Revenge, Hawaii Five-O, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Grey's Anatomy, The Mentalist, Lost, Prison Break, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and Beverly Hills 90210, to mention just a few. Using his decades of directing experience, Bobby has recently created A Director Prepares, Bobby Roth's Masterclass, which is an essential teaching tool and also fascinating documentary about film. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. That's coming up in the second hour. In this hour, as our topic this week, we're considering, should we edit humanity genetically? There's been a lot in the press recently about this. The San Francisco Chronicle has an article. David Perlman states, a crucial advance that could end the worst genetic diseases, but with possible effects on human heredity, has stirred such concern that scientists from around the world are gathering in Washington on Tuesday to explore its promise and potential for peril. Jennifer Doudna, who is the 51-year-old molecular and cell biologist at UC Berkeley, who is widely credited as the inventor of the CRISPR technology, which is one of these technologies which allows modifying genes. And she has said, in recent conversations, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, that she is concerned that not enough is known about the capabilities and limits of the new technologies when it comes to creating heritable mutations. She has argued that editing human germline cells should be banned because scientists must learn more about the potential consequences to proceed safely. However, one of her colleagues and scientific rivals, George Church, 61, a leading Harvard geneticist, disagrees. He argues that researchers should pursue the CRISPR technology urgently, albeit while under strict regulation. So I thought I would go out and about on the street. It is rather a complex topic, but I thought I would see what people think about this. Should we edit humanity genetically? Well, let's hear my first conversation. Hello, my name is Ruth Coplin from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to being interviewed. What are your names?
Zane.
Aidan.
Anne. Well, thanks so much for stopping for our out and about feature. This week we're considering, should we edit humanity genetically? Stuart A. Newman, professor of cell biology and anatomy at New York Medical College, writing in the Huffington Post, conjures up the following scene. Scene, a laboratory setting. A scientist begins constructing a new individual by combining parts from two different humans. A new part from one or two additional people is then added. At some point, an electric shock is administered. The scientist observes the composite for a few moments, looking for signs that it is on its way to becoming an autonomous being. It stirs. It's alive. If this sounds unsettlingly familiar, it should, but not because it is a replay of Frankenstein. The procedures described currently under evaluation by the British Human Fertilization and Embryo Authority for the prevention of mitochondrial diseases would carry profoundly negative implications for the future of the human species were they ever implemented, and thus warrant much wider concern than they have attracted up until now. This is the opinion of Professor Newman. Proponents argue that it's worth pursuing this research to enable people who couldn't otherwise have healthy offspring to reproduce. So I'm wondering whether you see this kind of science as a positive advance or whether you think genetic and editing of humans should be avoided.
Man, this,
who wants to go first?
This is tough.
I can go.
Do you want? Okay. You should go first.
I believe this has already happened. There's already children being born with three parents.
From IVF, being born,
and then we're modifying corn because people refer to GMO, but then it's like the GMOs don't actually have adverse side effects right now. They're currently researching that, and then people talk about like, oh no, get one chromosome off, which gives them a rare disorder, which causes what their older bones, ligaments, not be attached to their muscles. So it's like yes, then people who living they're like, oh, it's much more humane for them to let them live life like that, or much more humane to not let people have children for other to modify someone's genetics. Like, no, I guess it's not natural per se, but in a world of technology, like, your shampoo is not natural, your hair is not natural, like, what is natural nowadays? Like, what you're eating is not natural, and like, this is where they draw the line, is when we're trying to give someone a better life, trying to make people be able to have children. Like, I don't think that's such a terrible thing. I think if we need to know, get our facts straight, I think we need to do research, I think we need to have proper laws set up in order for us to implement this kind of treatment, but then I think it will benefit a lot of people. A lot of people who are able to bear children and don't have deformities simply don't understand the severity that some people have because of their genes. And so I'm fully for it. So.
Okay. What are your thoughts?
I guess my thoughts are pretty simple on it. The way I see it, if it helps people, great. If it doesn't, then I'm not okay with it. But I'm not the expert on it by any means.
No,
so.
Neither am I.
It's like, yeah. I don't know. If it helps, cool.
Okay.
As Aiden said, I'm not much of an expert either, okay. But there's a line that you shouldn't cross, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the point where you're helping other people, oh man, it's a broad line because we could be trying to make some superhuman soldier thing and.
Oh, okay, right.
That's like, I don't want to go into too science fiction sort of thing right now.
Okay.
But like.
Yeah. What do you call nowadays? Science fiction? Like, oh look, we're watching videos, talking to someone through your camera. That is science fiction and now it's reality. Like back now everyone's talking about witchcraft because every time something is science they don't understand, it's just witchcraft to them.
Yeah.
But in the future, when some of this becomes more common knowledge, like when the old generation day is out, I don't think it's seeing it's being such a huge issue. Like now, because the cars, you think the cars about 100 years ago, we ride around little horses, they probably think this is witchcraft too because they don't understand how combustion works in an engine. They probably understand genetics. We started to understand genetics more in terms of the 90s. So yes, it does freak a lot of people out. That's why people get scared of corn. So, because you breed them, so they work.
I mean, one of the aspects that I think people are concerned about is that sometimes once you go somewhere, there's no way back, because particularly with genetically modified vegetables and fruit, they can then propagate with non-GMO, and so people then don't have a choice anymore.
They're saying that they worry about people breeding. It's like, you had your genes modified, and we had babies. Now, I permanently have a modified baby with your... It's why it's a calf-modified baby because of you. Like, that is their big issue. But if there makes no difference, people can't really tell.
Right.
And people don't notice a difference in their everyday lives, then what do they have a problem with going backwards? Is it just the whole ethics of, my great-great-great-great-grandfather, long time ago, had three parents? And it was the most absurd thing. People had three wives.
One of the things that people are concerned about with genetic editing of humans, it's a slippery slope to eugenics and the impetus to improve society.
Eugenics happened in California up to the early 70s.
And people are concerned about that.
I don't want to get to the point where I have to choose the color of skin on my baby and the color of their eyes. Like that one Key and Peele sketch that they did, and then they felt bad because the doctor was everything they weren't picking. And I was like, this is not okay.
Yeah, I don't want Gattaca.
No Gattaca.
Like,
that's why we have laws and rules that we can pick and choose what people can and cannot do with their genes. We can try to pick it.
The thing is, you're sort of talking about, I wouldn't call it utopian, but no, you're talking about a situation where this is all under the scientists' control at the moment.
No, nothing's under the scientists' control.
It's not. So are you okay with the idea of creating embryos that may not be viable and those all being disposed of, or creating human beings who are effectively uncontrolled laboratory experiments, because they don't know what messing with this mitochondrial DNA is actually going to do? And so do you think it's acceptable to create babies or embryos and humans who could perhaps be deformed in some ways on the road towards trying to eliminate genetic diseases?
It sounds like people read a lot of sci-fi and are assuming we're going to make a superhumans to have like 10 arms and conquer the world.
Well, no, I'm just saying, even in this case where they're actually trying to help people with a specific mitochondrial disease, they haven't managed to do it yet. And so there's going to be a process of creating a lot of embryos that aren't viable, and then human beings created in this process that may also not be viable long term. Does that seem an acceptable risk to you to do this?
I think throughout the history of humanity, we've have tested on people. We have to cut up a lot of people and butcher people. We butchered a lot of prisoners.
And I'm not sure that was a good thing, though. Are you saying that was acceptable?
It wasn't acceptable, but then it's happened throughout our lives, because now what? We're like, what medicines? Where do you think the medicine came from? What kind of test do you think that came from? Just because they're not aware of what happened, of how we got the ibuprofen in the first place, because they're naive to that. They think it's almost ethical. Do you ever wonder how we first got, even our heart surgeries, how did they first go through the steps of doing that?
Well, that was people who gave their
then.
Permission to have those things done to them.
There was always permission to do that.
Well, it seems a strange argument that you're making, that the fact that there have been human rights abuses in the past is an argument for going forward with this research.
Oh, I think it's just one of those things, I don't know, it's one of those things that always has happened, and now like people just become more aware of it, so now they're having more of an issue with it.
But it sounds like you're saying the underlying issue is okay with you, whereas most people would feel like...
Well, this is also the same argument as people talking about whether embryos are alive or not, whether they're counted as human beings, and talking about what kind of rights embryos have, and taking... of course, a lot of those arguments has to do with ethics and religion, so it kind of depends on your cultural context.
Okay, so you have a lot of strong thoughts. What are your thoughts on it?
Altruism? Should a single individual sacrifice themselves for the greater good of humanity?
Yeah.
Okay, so just to address you again, although I would like to hear from them as well, but to address that, you're talking about a situation where these beings are being brought into creation with no choice of their own. The examples you've given are people who, you know, chose to be experimented on or chose to have heart surgery when it was experimental. That's a completely different situation. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's hear what these two have to say, because you've said a lot. So, what are your thoughts on, do you think the risks involved are worth the benefits?
I truthfully don't know. Because like you said, we're more like aware of these things, but I don't know if that makes it okay that it still goes on. But on the other hand, how else do we advance? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, is the impetus to have your own biological children so great that we should enable people to do that at any risk? I mean, people can adopt children. It's not like, you know, they can't have a family in another way. So,
sure.
Is that something you would consider?
I mean, I guess for me, it's like, I don't think I'd ever be desperate enough that I would need to, you know, play around with some genetics or whatever to make that happen for myself. But I don't know, other people.
Yeah. What about you?
It honestly depends. What's the cost?
The cost, as in
the cost,
money?
Cost.
Or the cause?
Cause. So, I mean, if you're looking to cure cancer, I guess, sure. Kind of. It's a huge gray area that we're talking about. And, like, I actually wasn't prepared for this interview, kind of. But, I mean...
It's a deep subject that
takes a lot of thought and a lot of research and a lot of know-how. And I don't think I'm ready for that.
Okay.
So,
but it's certainly not something you would just say, no, we shouldn't do that.
We shouldn't. Like, I can't honestly give you an
opinion.
Honest answer right now. Exactly.
Right, okay.
Like...
All right, well, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
Thank you very much for your thoughts, all of you. Thank you. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, my on-the-street conversations. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversations after these messages.
You
like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and I've been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 48 years. We are a one-stop shop for all your holiday needs, including books, gifts, children's books, toys, holiday cards, puzzles, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right gift for everyone on your list. If you want something special, we feature mini autograph books by best-selling authors at no extra charge. If you can't get downtown, our website has 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my on-the-street conversations on this week's topic. Should we edit humanity genetically? Quite a complex topic, but I think obviously a very important one to be thinking about. And the whole point of this first hour of the show is to get us thinking, get us turning things over in our own mind, and perhaps by hearing other people's opinions, formulating a clearer idea of what we think ourselves, whether we agree with people or whether we disagree with them. If you have any comments, do email me at ruth@itsaquestionofbalance.com. I'd love to hear what you think about this and any of the other topics that we've covered. And if you want to hear them, you can go to the website itsaquestionofbalance.com. All the podcasts are there of previous shows with interesting topics and wonderful arts guests that we've had. Anyway, let's get back to our out and about interviews this week. Let's hear my next conversation, which was with Anders. Hello, my name is Ruth Copeland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thanks for agreeing to be interviewed. What is your name?
My name is Anders.
Thanks so much for stopping for Out and About. This week we're considering, should we edit humanity genetically? The Economist states that a new technology promises to make it possible to edit genetic information quickly and cheaply. This could correct terrible defects that blight lives. It also heralds the distant prospect of parents building their children to order. I'm wondering whether you see this kind of science as a positive advance to help people who couldn't otherwise have a healthy offspring, or whether you think genetic editing of humans should be avoided?
Well, frankly, I think any tool should be utilized to its fullest extent. It's really up to the ethics of the user that defines whether or not we should do it. If we are going to, say, use a hammer to crack the skull of the individual who doesn't have, you know, the generosity to give us all their money, then sure, we should tell that person not to use that hammer. But if we're going to tell that person to use a hammer to build all of these buildings that we use every day and help create something positive for everybody else, we should use that. It's really the tools that each of us use are up to the hands of the user and not to the tools themselves.
Okay. I mean, I guess in this situation, in the US, there are less regulations than in other places, and so proceeding with this kind of experimentation is already underway, according to scientist Stuart Newman. But I'm wondering whether you think we should try to influence the direction of science through regulations, or whether scientists should be able to just experiment as they wish, because obviously there's a large number of people who don't want these things to happen. So how do we go about representing the views of all people?
Well, I guess the bottom line for all research that I know of anyway, in my experience, is funding. And the groups that fund any given research group are, I mean, the funds come from wherever the money is generated. And the money is generally, in the state, it's generated by representatives who is supposedly voted for by the people. And in private interest groups, it comes from what the money's interest is. So it's really hard for us to say, especially in this country, where we know interest groups do control most of generally what happens here. Any of the research, any of the manufacturing, it's interest groups that control that.
Yeah. I mean, to that point, according to Stefan Kuhl in the Nazi Connection, Eugenics, American Race, and German National Socialism, American eugenics programs, which were enacted in the early 20th century and resulted in over 60,000 Americans being forcibly sterilized, were an inspiration for Nazi eugenics programs. Genetic editing would be another, albeit potentially more sophisticated, way of controlling which people dominate. Is this danger something you consider when thinking about human genetic modification and where it might lead if it was an accepted practice? I mean, you know, it gives the potential to eliminate certain groups of people, to give strength to other groups of people. I mean, I know that's in the future, but obviously we're at the point now where we could control that, whereas once we go further down that path, then we would lose that control.
Well, that certainly is a good question to ask, because certainly we are, in our advances in technology, we've been moving faster and faster, exponentially, really, in how we create our future. You know, 100 years ago, we affected our future at a far slower rate. The Industrial Revolution itself did make huge advances, but today, the Industrial Revolution looks archaic, simply because of the nature of the advances we make today. Every 10 years, we get X amount more power, which is 10 times the power we got in the same 10 years, 100 years ago. So what your question is asking, what kind of power that holds in our future? I think every choice we make now, in especially in genetics, makes a much bigger difference. And what that could mean for us is that if the, say, special interest groups, the people who actually have power over genetics, decide to make these decisions, then we have to pay attention. Mm. We have to make sure that we, as the general populace, that is, have to pay attention to whether or not somebody is actually directing research in that manner. If they keep it all in the secret, I really don't think we have a power over that. And I think the only countermand to that would be
transparency,
but the countermand, rather, if transparency is not what they do, because you're right, I obviously that would be preferable, but I think that's rather idealistic, because obviously when you have enough money, nothing needs to be transparent.
Right.
The money is what you see. Ideally, the countermand would be keeping the power in the hands of the people. Each individual should have as much power as anybody with money. Mm. And unfortunately, with research, with technology, money talks, because money is what affords such power, such research.
I mean, one of the things that I was wondering is to try and circumvent this situation that you're talking about, whether something as important as this should be voted on by the people, you know, before it becomes legal to do.
Frankly, whether it's voted on or not, I don't think that'll make a huge difference, because they'll do the research whether or not it's been voted on. If there's enough interest...
What if it's illegal? You mean they'll just do it illegally?
Research is done whether it's legal or not.
Right.
The thing is, if it's not legal here, they will outsource the research elsewhere. It's very simple. We've been doing that for as long as we've been using scientific research, whether or not there's been bureaucracy or a constitution in place that's been going on for centuries.
Yeah.
What is true nowadays is that each individual has as much power now as a king of the past. In the way we can utilize resources, the way we can acquire, say, a car, which somebody 200 years ago, a king, would have never heard of. We, each of us, have amazing physical resources at hand. If we actually utilize that to our benefit and learn about the resources around us that our politicians speak of, rather than simply taking their word for it, we would have a much better impact on how these come out. I think the vote is much less of an option.
Okay. One thing I wanted to challenge is, throughout what you've been saying, you've talked about advances. I would say perhaps a more neutral term is changes, because I think, you know, there's some people who would argue that some of the things that have happened since the Industrial Revolution, they wouldn't consider to be advances in our civilization. In fact, they could even be retrograde. Is that something you would consider, that it's...
So I could see where they could be coming from. If it depends what you mean when you say advances. When I say advances, I do mean technological and scientific advances, which imply we have more options at hand, we have more knowledge than we had before.
Okay.
The thing with science is, through the scientific method, you have to obtain data through observation, and you have to use that data to exemplify repetitive or replicable results. You have to be able to go, okay, I can do this, and then do it because you said you could, and then somebody across the world can do the same thing.
Right.
And if that new information is replicable across the world, then that's a new advance. That's more knowledge than we can utilize. And that becomes a tool. And as I stated at the beginning of the interview, tools are utilized as far as the ethics of the user limits them.
Right.
So if we decide to advance our society by using genetic engineering, genetic modification progressively, and literally advancing everybody and not for personal profit, then it will be an advance. Whereas ethically, it may not be an advance if we're using it negatively. So I could agree with an opposition saying that's not necessarily an advance, but a hindrance to a society if they use it selfishly.
Right.
It all depends on the user.
Okay. These genetic modification techniques are radical, and to a large degree, obviously, because it's very new research, untested. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the risks of creating embryos by this method that may not be able to survive, or if they did survive, will be human beings who are effectively uncontrolled laboratory experiments. And you've got a situation where in America, obviously, the country's divided about abortion. This is perhaps an even more complex situation where this research could involve a huge amount of wastage of human life, if you like, in terms of embryos that go wrong. Do you think that the benefits outweigh the risks? Do you think that's an acceptable risk? And if it, or a cost, an acceptable cost? And if it is, what about all the people who feel that that is fundamentally against God, if they believe in God, or against nature? Do we just ignore those people's feelings and assume that we are right because this could lead to these advances, as you're talking about?
It sounds like you're almost asking, but not quite, whether or not abortion is
I think they're allied.
That is a necessary question to answer in order to follow through.
I'm not asking about abortion
through.
Specifically, but,
You aren't.
IVF, obviously.
It's through that, though. Yeah. I have to answer that question in order to follow through.
Right.
And really, I mean, personally, I think if you haven't actually developed into a human being, then, and we haven't given you rights as a human being, given under any other human rights laws, then why would we treat you otherwise?
I mean, I think, I don't want to make it about abortion, because I think abortion is quite different in terms of it's one person making a decision about a very specific set of circumstances. And this is a different case of where we're actively creating embryos, you know, in the pursuit of this research. So I think I'm not sure they're as connected as you are saying, but I'm just wondering whether you...
It is a question that hasn't been hard answered. You do bring up a good point. They aren't exactly the same situation. What I do see is the same situation is we are questioning whether or not an embryo has the right to be considered ethically. How that's regarded ethically depends on the situation, whether or not it was, say, a rape baby, as they would bring up, or simply a baby that they didn't expect to have, or whether you're creating it for scientific research purposes. Either way, there's an embryo here that we have to regard, and we are questioning ethically now. And what I'm seeing is If we are literally making scientific advancements for the good of many and we aren't actually causing the suffering of anyone, and we cannot consider this suffering, if we cannot consider the suffering, these are not answers I'm
So you're not considering the embryo is suffering?
I'm not presuming to answer whether or not anybody is suffering in the situation.
Okay.
If we can determine whether or not somebody is suffering, the embryo or whomever is in contact with the embryo, say the scientists, if they don't feel right about it, if we're forcing them to do this, that would be wrong too. If we can consider that it is okay and we deem there is no suffering, then I see no problem to go forth with it. If we cannot prove that there is suffering within the embryo, within the scientists doing this research, within the people managing such projects, then I see no problem not to go through with it. There are many things that we go through with that are unethical today that regard other embryos or other living beings today. Animal testing is prevalent throughout all countries in all walks of life.
Which many people are against in
trying to
prevent.
And many people are against.
Yeah.
So why is the question any different in my point? If we are creating suffering, sure. Yeah. If we are creating any suffering at all, then it should be questioned.
Okay.
I'm not going to pretend I have those answers. These are questions we should all consider.
Yeah. Finally, this whole area of research is coming under the auspices of medicine. I'm wondering, do you think it is the remit of medicine to be concerned with people who are not even born yet? Or do you think medicine should just focus on helping actual existing sick people?
Well, actually existing sick people sometimes were people who were destined to be sick before they were born. So I think that is a solid approach, the former, that is.
Yeah.
People that weren't even born yet are often become people who are already sick. So it would be foolish to assume otherwise.
Yeah.
We know genetic disorders exist. We see them throughout our lives.
Right.
And we can't ignore them, in fact. And people make jokes about them. People will take them seriously. It is a part of our lives. Most of us, I think, can say we know somebody who's dealt with that. So that is not a question in my view. I think that is firmly, we must help people who could be sick in the future, whether or not they're born. How we approach that, I don't know enough. I'm not qualified, frankly, to say how we should approach that. What I can say is if we're not causing suffering in the line of that research, if we can determine whether or not, and like to reiterate, if we can determine whether or not embryos are actually suffering for the sake of our research, sure. If we actually have a human birth because of this research, a human, say, is birthed because of after the genetic modifications while they're an embryo and they live a tortured life, then that was a failed project and we should have canceled it long before.
Right. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your opinions. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thanks to Anders there for talking to me about this complex topic. I'm always very grateful to people stopping and giving their thoughts on the quite complex things that we consider on the show. But also, it's just great to hear what people's off-the-cuff thoughts are on things and definitely get us thinking. So next up, the next person I spoke to is Joshua. Let's hear what he had to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's a Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
My name is Joshua Scrivener.
Well, thanks for stopping for Out and About, Joshua. And this week we're considering, should we edit humanity genetically? The Economist states, being able to read, study and compare DNA sequence for humans has become routine. However, many scientists want a moratorium on editing germline cells, which give rise to subsequent generations. In other words, the manipulation of DNA to manufacture a modified human being. This involves using the DNA of more than two people, as is traditionally the case when a baby is conceived. It requires the addition of DNA from one or two additional people. With the motivation of allowing people with genetic diseases to have healthy offspring, this kind of research is already underway in America, according to Professor Stuart Newman. I'm wondering whether you see this kind of science as a positive advance to help people who couldn't otherwise have healthy offspring, or whether you think genetic editing of humans should be avoided.
Well, the thing is, when you start modifying something that is a permanent record, then it can have a detrimental effect on the whole organism. So the organism itself, all of our DNA helix, has been through a progression of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it started out as the simplest form, but in every single one of our nucleuses in our atoms, we only need to have one nucleus to have a DNA sequence
mm-hmm.
that's replicated in all the other ones. But Even in a single-celled organism, it has its own genetic history. So even a single-celled organism that we cannot even see is a being that may have lowered its entropy. The highest entropy is becoming pure love, of course. Mm. But the lowest entropy is becoming hate.
Yeah. I mean, you're making me wonder, talking about, you know, the evolution of our DNA, about the unintended consequences, perhaps, of this kind of research, because it is so new and we don't really know what we're doing. We're interfering with something, as you have pointed out, that is millions of, perhaps trillions of years old. Is that something that might concern you, that we don't really have no way of knowing exactly what the long-term repercussions could be?
The thing is, if we create a bunch of clones, what if they're better than us and they decide to kill all of us?
Well, there is that.
I mean, real talk.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
This is not about clones, but yeah.
Well, I mean, if we start cloning humans and we start making them better than we could have ever been ourselves with our own DNA progression by combining multiple strands of DNA and making, just like someone in the military told me, that they made a spider and a goat hybrid, and it's basically milking the goat, and they make the new armor that can stop the RIP bullet with the armor, just goes in just like a dart.
I mean, obviously, this is something that's been explored in science fiction. For Nature.com, Dr. Lauren Rivard of San Diego University and Taryn Bush write about the fact that most people don't know that America had a eugenics program in the early 20th century. They state the term eugenics was first coined by Francis Galton, an English intellectual whose body of work spanned many fields, who analyzed the characteristics such as superior intelligence of England's upper classes and concluded they were hereditary, and advocated a selective breeding program for humans in his book Hereditary Genius, published in 1869. And the eugenics movement took root in the United States in the early 1900s, led by Charles Davenport, a prominent biologist, and Henry Laughlin, a former teacher and principal interested in breeding. And whereas the English eugenics movement, championed by Galton, promoted eugenics through selective breeding for positive traits, in contrast, the eugenics movement in the US quickly focused on eliminating negative traits. Not surprisingly, undesirable traits were concentrated in poor, uneducated, and minority populations. And in an attempt to prevent these groups from propagating, eugenicists helped drive legislation for their forced sterilization, which was enacted in 30 states. These laws resulted in the forced sterilization of over 64,000 people in the United States. And genetic editing would be, albeit more sophisticated, way of controlling people, and could lead to what you're saying in terms of, you know, the military trying to engineer people, you know, who have certain traits. I mean, this obviously seems far down the line, but do you think this is something we should consider at this point, where the research is just starting, and whether it should be allowed, or do you think it's unlikely we would ever go that far?
Well, I did say nothing about military. I was thinking if the clones just got mad at us.
Oh, I thought you were saying that they would develop skin that couldn't be pierced by bullets.
No.
Oh, so that would just
about that.
Be okay.
But I was thinking if they made a bunch of clones and them clones got mad at all of us, then them clones are gonna hurt us and we're not gonna be able to fight them. So that's all I'm thinking there. But you were talking about how there's a eugenics project, and
I mean, that was a real thing where they actually wanted to control people.
There's been a lot of eugenics going on.
Yeah.
And it started with the olden days, very old. I mean, I've researched so deep into the internet with this that I'm actually, you know, one of the only people that knows certain things, because I've stuck out and found the knowledge. So back in the earliest birth control days, that's when the eugenicists started.
Yes, yeah.
And the vaccines, when they cripple 80,000 kids, it's basically exposing them to something that either they did or did not conquer.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know what it is that they didn't conquer,
right,
but we know that the result and the karmic result is that you get crippled for this thing.
I don't want to get too off topic, but obviously what you're talking about is a means of some people controlling others. So do you think that if we allow this kind of genetic engineering, that we are opening up a kind of Pandora's box of what might be done with it in the future?
If we don't do genetic research, then it'll be a giant question mark. But if we start playing God, so to speak, and we start creating our own things, we don't know what those things are going to do to us, so we shouldn't be creating stuff. We definitely want to do all the research, acquire all the wisdom we can, but we don't want to be creating stuff.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your opinion. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my on-the-street conversations. We're going to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages. Imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and in this hour we are doing the Out and About feature where I talk to people on the street about a different topic each week. And this week we're considering, should we edit humanity genetically? A very deep subject. We've had some interesting thoughts from people on the street, and I hope that it's providing some food for thought for you listening as well. Well, my final interview this week was with Bella, so let's hear what she has to say. Hello, my name's Ruth Copland from It's Question of Balance radio show. Thank you for agreeing to being interviewed. What is your name?
My name's Bella.
Thanks for taking part in our Out and About feature. This week we're considering, should we edit humanity genetically? Professor of Cell Biology and Anatomy Stuart Newman states, these methods would attempt to prevent the propagation of unhealthy mitochondria by producing children with the reproductive cells and parts thereof of 3 or 4 different individuals. Apart from these manipulations not being necessary to save the lives or alleviate illness of any existing people, their subjects being prospective people, they are inherently unsafe. Unlike in vitro fertilization, IVF, which generates embryos from the biological components that evolved to serve this function, the two methods under consideration by the HFEA de- and reconstruct the fertilized egg in radical ways, unprecedented in the history of life. So I'm wondering whether you see this kind of science as a positive advance to help people have healthy offspring who otherwise perhaps wouldn't be able to, or whether you think genetic editing in this way of humans should be avoided.
Oh my goodness, what a subject. It's huge. Very difficult to just form an opinion now, but immediately that what comes to mind is that there will be some good always from advancement in technology or science in helping eliminate certain horrible illnesses like motor neurons disease and Parkinson's, but then, you know, it can be misused and it can be abused, and it can have horrendous results then for evolution, for, you know, being able to sort of engineer what humanity can or cannot actually become. So, yes, it's a bit frightening, really.
I mean, a lot of what we're doing with science is creating ethical dilemmas for ourselves that wouldn't exist if we weren't pursuing these sort of options. And, you know, this is one of those things, I think. And, you know, early in the 20th century, America enacted various eugenics programs, which resulted in over 60,000 Americans being forcibly sterilized. So one danger that people worry about when thinking about human genetic modification is where it might lead if it was an accepted practice, and who's in control of it, and what the pressures might be to manipulate human beings in a certain direction of what's considered acceptable, perhaps.
Well, yes, this is the dilemma, isn't it? You know, much has been achieved already through transplants and, you know, being able to save lives by using spare parts or parts, you know, that are no longer in use because the person's deceased, and the organs being kept alive. You know, you could say, is that ethical? I mean, you know, if you had a child that was dying of a kidney disease and the child could have someone else's kidney, would you agree to that or not? So
I guess in that situation, though, there is the possibility of consent from all the parties, the person who's donating their kidney, the person who's accepting it, the child, the parents. They all can give their permission of wanting to go forward with that, whereas this is a kind of manipulation of DNA to create a human being that then comes into being who had no choice about the you know, what was done to manipulate the DNA, which they then have.
Well, it makes the mind boggle, actually, sort of science fiction becoming a reality. And the consequences, you know, could be quite absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
Obviously, there'd have to be legislation. There would have to be some kind of really strict control on exactly what could or could not be achieved. But any kind of manipulation, as far as I'm concerned, goes against creation. You know, goes against God or a larger intelligence. It beggars belief, really, that you could achieve such a consequence.
Part of this also is that, you know, these techniques are relatively untested and unproven. So I'm wondering whether you think that the risks of creating embryos by this method that may not be able to survive, or if they did survive, creating human beings who are effectively uncontrolled laboratory experiments, whether these risks are outweighed by the benefits if we can prevent people being born with severe illnesses.
No, I don't think that even if you could prevent people being born with severe illnesses, that you should interfere.
with evolution in such a way. And it doesn't sit right with me at all. And I really hope and pray that it doesn't become something that governments, you know, will condone.
What doesn't sit right with you about it? What would be your fears?
Well, I mean, there is such a thing as love, the power of love, and normally a human being is conceived, hopefully, in the main, through a loving relationship with one another. I know that there has been a misuse and abuse of sexual contact in recent years, and that there are very much one-night stands, and children are born because of that, but they're not being engineered. There is some kind of relationship, some exchange of energy between two human beings.
Well, talking about energy, I guess that there is possibly an element to all of this that's not being taken into account, that there is energy in all parts of creation, and we don't know how we might be interfering with that, as well as how we might be interfering with, you know, there might be unforeseen consequences of making these DNA changes down the line.
Yes, I think you're quite right, and obviously you're concerned because you've raised the subject, and it is a very interesting subject, and needs to be aired.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I think, you know, that it is something that needs to be considered, because if we have regulation, then who makes those regulations, who decides what people do, and also how do we represent everybody's opinion, because there's a whole range of people who don't want this to happen. So how do we represent their desires with also the people who want to move it forward? So I think, as you said, it is something that we really need to give a lot of thought to. So I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, dear.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Thanks so much to everybody who talked to me this week for our Out and About feature. I hope it's got you thinking, even if you don't know what your final thought is on this. Hopefully it's given you some things to turn over in your mind. I know it has for me, definitely. Just to remind you again that coming up in the second hour, I'm very pleased to be interviewing award-winning film director Bobby Roth. Over his long career, he's directed more than 80 episodes of television, 25 TV movies, and 13 feature films. His films have been exhibited in over 100 film festivals worldwide, and five of his films have premiered at the renowned Sundance Film Festival, where he's also been a judge. And his work in commercial TV includes directing episodes for such favourite TV shows as Revenge, Hawaii Five-0, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Grey's Anatomy, The Mentalist, Lost, Prison Break, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and Beverly Hills 90210, to mention just a few. Bobby was a founding member of the Independent Feature Project, which champions the future of storytelling by connecting artists with essential resources. And during its 35-year history, has offered resources to more than 20,000 filmmakers. He was also the first co-chairman of the Directors Guild of America's Independent Feature Committee. And using these decades of a directing experience, Bobby's recently created A Director Prepares, Bobby Roth's Masterclass, which is an amazing teaching tool for those going into film, but it's also a fascinating documentary where he's interviewed over 50 people that he's personally worked with, half of them actors, many of them very famous and also very well-known directors. So it's an amazing project. I'm looking forward to finding out more about that from him. That's coming up in the second hour. Remember, you can always go to my website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. We are going to a break now, but I will see you after the break.